Morning, it's 8:59. This is KBOO Portland. Coming up next, it's Press Watch with Teresa Mitchell. Her weekly look at the news you're not supposed to know. At 9:30, Fight the Empire with host Per Fogering. Per welcomes Professor Stephen Cohen to talk about his new book, War with Russia, from Putin and Ukraine to Trump and Russiagate. Are we in a new Cold War with Russia? How does a new Cold War affect the safety and security of the United States? Does Vladimir Putin really want to destabilize the West? At 10 o'clock, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 on Between the Covers, it's a conversation between author Liz Crane and Edward Lee about his new book, Buttermilk Graffiti, A Chef's Journey to Discover America's New Melting Pot Cuisine. And at 11:30, Black Book Talk welcomes Coco LeBon to talk about her new book, Legend of the Chocolate River. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on donate. Coming up next, it's Press Watch.
It's another big give day through the Willamette Week Give Guide. If you haven't had a chance to give to KBOO, today is the day to do it.
Donate at kboo.fm/give today for a chance to win a Sony RX100 VA mirrorless camera from Pro Photo Supply.
If you're 35 or under, you have an even better chance to win. A second camera will be raffled off to one donor under the age of 36.
Your investment today matters. KBOO needs your support to broadcast and archive the voices, conversation, and artistry of our community.
Go to kboo.fm/give to contribute now.
Support KBOO.
Where music makes the movement.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. I have a lot of topics to bring up today, but I want to start with Danielle James. Remember Danielle? She's been on the air a fair number of times. She was one of the leaders and one of the most active people out at the Occupy ICE event, which took place on a little swath of TriMet land. And because it was TriMet land, it took a while for the powers that be, notably the police department, to get in there and kick everyone out, which they were wanting to do from the start, no doubt. And it was a beautiful thing. It started in the middle of June. And at first, it made news around the world because it actually shut down the criminal immigration and customs enforcement agency there, which is run by G-Force and is on city land, has a lease. And you may recall that the local corporate press was so furious about this extended spasm of dissent that they attempted to smear them as having trash and feces everywhere. Actually, of course, what really happened is that everyone was run out on a deadline without enough time to decommission the place. And as for the feces, well, there were composting buckets. And it's one of those things that corporate media can do so well to smear someone. In this case, they literally smeared them with poop, and that's what people remember. It worked pretty well. They think that the Occupy ICE place was filthy. Well, it wasn't. It's a lie. It's a well-done lie. That really was pieces of trash you saw on the ground on that television. But that's not the whole story. So Danielle was there, was doing her thing. At one point, Danielle lost her temper and just really, really chewed out a news camera woman, and now she's being punished for that. Now, you've chewed out people before, you've lost your temper before, but if you're white like me, you didn't get charged with a crime for it. Now, my personal whiteness has been dinged a little bit by the fact that I'm transgender, and so I actually have been brought in, and there was an attempt to put me down for 10 years for yelling at some businessmen once after they threatened me. So I sympathize with what's happening to Danielle, and I'm calling this out because I want you to pay attention to the fact that dissent is being actively crushed by judicial repression. And the charges against Danielle have nothing to do with what happened. They are inappropriate. And I was there when she faced them earlier this week. And the people who were complaining against her as much as admitted that she had actually done nothing in the nature of what she's being charged for. They're trying to put her down for a year. Put her away. Lock her up. Basically for being uppity. You don't hear that word much, do you? But we still act on it. We whites, we still put down black people for being uppity. And that's what it's about. She's up against false charges. And this is something I want to emphasize. In the United States, you are guilty until proven affluent. You need 10,000 or tens of thousands to hire a lawyer. You can be charged with anything, and you are guilty. That's it. There's a lot of details to it. But once you're charged, you're guilty. I'm talking about statistics pretty close to 94%. We'll take a plea bargain. That's what they're trying to do to her. Take a plea bargain. But she's not guilty. And she's going to fight it. So she got up at the courthouse, made her appearance, and she had this to say. Well, now, having said that, let me see if I can get the thing to play.
My name is Danielle James. Some of you may know me as an activist, but Black Lives Matter as a leader and organizer for the Occupy ICE movement. I feel I have a moral obligation to speak up for those who have been denied a voice. I'm seeking justice for people of color in this city. I'm calling out the inhumane policies of separating families at the border. In October of last year, a leaked report from the FBI categorized black activists as a domestic threat, coining the term black identity extremists. This has opened the door for the FBI to target black activists while justifying the criminalization and surveillance of black people in general. As this repression takes the stage, an infamous and ongoing series of assaults by right-wing and white identity extremists has gone largely unpublished. This city continues to welcome white extremists whose speech truly has incited violence on our streets. Today, I'm facing charges that are leveled at me in retaliation for my activism and dissent. There is no hope of factually or logically proving that I engaged in abusive, assaultive behavior. And indeed, there is a body of video and audio evidence that shows that I did not. Instead, the local media, capitalists, the police, and the court hope to silence my dissent by bringing charges that they hope I cannot counter for lack of economic resources. This court represents an attack on free speech. It is an attempt to intimidate all those who would stand up against injustice by using the streets to petition their government for redress of grievances. It is another blow in a series of 500 years of oppression against all those who stand in the way of brutal business as usual. I have led activists to the best of my ability to bring attention to the inhumane and illegal practice tearing children away from their desperate and grieving parents. I will not cease in my efforts until this injustice is banned from our government and our society.
Abolish ICE!
Abolish ICE!
Abolish ICE!
There you have it. Another of America's finest Border Patrol agents has been caught in the process of executing women. Juan Davis Ortiz admits to killing 4 women, including a trans woman, as part of his effort to make America great by cleaning up the streets, according to him. Here's an excerpt from the Laredo Times. Ortiz is accused of slaying Melissa Ramirez on September 3rd, Claudine Ann Luera on September 13th, Huiselda Alicia Hernandez, and Nikki Enriquez around September 14th. All 4 were killed in roughly the same area near North U.S. 83 and I-35 in the northwest part of Webb County, Texas. According to the indictment, Ramirez, Luera, and Enriquez, a transgender woman, were each shot in the head, end quote. He got caught because one got away. According to CNN, Ortiz allegedly picked up Ms. Pena at a prostitution hub on September 14th. Pena knew Ortiz as David and rode with him to his home in the northern part of Laredo. Pena noticed that Ortiz began to act weird, that's her quote, when she brought up her acquaintance, Melissa Ramirez, who had been killed the week before. According to the affidavit from his home, Ortiz took Pena to a gas station off the Texas 20 loop, and there they again discussed Ramirez. That's when Ortiz pulled out a pistol and pointed it at Pena. According to the affidavit, Ortiz grabbed her shirt to prevent a screaming Pena from leaving the car. Family of women who escaped from Border Patrol agents said it's a miracle she's alive. Pena was able to describe Ortiz, his tattoos, and his truck, as well as bring investigators to his home. End quote. Meanwhile, the Trump administration is ramping up the family separation terror regime again, this time by sneaking it into Border Patrol procedural instructions. Procedural instructions is how they're denying and revoking passports for transgender women also. So there you have it. MAGA marches on this week in whiteness. Turning to Portland news, Marijuana Business Daily and the Portland Mercury have articles on the recent pot inspections in Oregon. Quoting Marijuana Business Daily, more than a quarter of Oregon's outdoor recreational marijuana producers had deficiencies or potential compliance violations in their harvest processes, according to the results of Operation Good Harvest, the state's effort to observe and inspect the 2018 outdoor cannabis harvest. Of the 354 licensed outdoor recreational grow sites inspected by the Oregon Liquor Control Commission between September and early November, 95 licensees, that's 27%, were found to have discrepancies or shortcomings in their harvest activities, and 41 face possible revocation of their cultivation licenses. The compliance checks were scheduled during outdoor harvest season after the OLCC identified harvest as an opportunity for diversion, and they illustrate how serious Oregon regulators are about preventing legally grown marijuana from making its way to the black market, end quote. Now, turning to the Mercury, they say that 55% of Bend area businesses were out of compliance. This all feeds into the national conservative narrative that pot states are exporting across the U.S., which I'm sure they are. But, you know, they're ruining little Johnny and Jane's All-American football hero status. And we may be hearing more about that because we have a right-wing government, and Mr. Whitaker has taken over for Mr. Sessions as Attorney General. He doesn't seem to be as a fanatic about enforcing federal marijuana laws, and that's a good thing. But that could change because he is... In that context of conservatives, you're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. At 9 o'clock, well, you're listening to me. Let me start again at 9:30. Stay tuned for Fight the Empire with host Per Fagering. He'll be talking about a very interesting book about Russia. I think that you'll want to hear that. So the name of the book is War with Russia, From Putin and Ukraine to Trump and Russiagate. At 10 o'clock, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 o'clock, Between the Covers, it's a conversation between author Liz Crane and Edward Lee about his new book, Buttermilk Graffiti, A Chef's Journey to Discover America's New Melting Pot Cuisine. And 11:30, Black Book Talk welcomes Coco Labone to talk about her book, Legend of the Chocolate River. All of these programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate. Now turning to... ongoing events. By the way, the stock market is wobbly again today, and that should worry you a bit because the last time it was severely wobbly and last time it crashed, the problems were not fixed. I mean, not only was the patch that was applied on your back, not only was it borne by your efforts, but... it didn't actually fix it. The derivatives betting, the hundreds, if not thousands, of trillions of dollars in unpayable derivatives are still hanging over the stock market and thus over the economy of the world like the sword of Damocles. And significantly, gold bumped up during this, which indicates that there's enough people who are worried about the state of things generally to buy the shiny, shiny metal. The Emoluments Clause of the U.S. Constitution is there to prevent the use of the office of the presidency as a cash cow. You can't just become president and use it to rake in the bucks. Does that remind you of anyone? Well, it isn't being enforced against Trump so far. Of course, that might change since the opposition won the House of Representatives. From Slate magazine, the details of some of the possible constitutional violations where President Trump is profiting from payments by foreign governments are on full display in a Washington Post report Wednesday that found lobbyists representing the government of Saudi Arabia, they reserved some 500 rooms at Trump's Washington, D.C. hotel shortly after the 2016 election. Now, actually, Slate wrote, President Trump is potentially profiting. They're being careful, I guess. But I just couldn't say that word potentially as I delivered the sentence. But continuing with the article, at the time, these lobbyists were reserving large numbers of D.C. area hotel rooms as part of an unorthodox campaign that offered U.S. military veterans a free trip to Washington, then sent them to Capitol Hill to lobby against a law the Saudis opposed. At first, Saudi lobbyists put up the veterans in Northern Virginia, then in December 2016, notably, that would be after Trump won the presidency, they switched most of their business to the Trump International Hotel in downtown Washington, and all the lobbyists spent more than $250,000 to house six groups of visiting veterans at the Trump Hotel, which Trump still owns. So there's more on that article at Slate. And, you know, speaking of 45, with the change of the House, and with the continuing Mueller investigation, pardon me, the independent counsel, special prosecutor, that is, you may be wondering what it all amounts to. And I think it's going to be something like this. Mueller is going to issue his report, I think probably pretty soon. And when he does, well, it's supposed to go to the Attorney General. It's going to go to Whitaker. And Whitaker is going to sit on it. That would be the end of the story, except that, of course, after the inauguration of the new Democratic House, the way Democratic House, they will then subpoena the report. And so we'll begin to see what's in it officially after the first of the year. Once that's done, they still face, when it comes to getting rid of the core of corruption, or let's just say the core of the worst corruption in Washington, since the words are synonymous in my mind, what will happen is that the House of Representatives will then form committees, and they will take various parts of that report, and they'll begin to work up details, and they will present that to the public. And the reason they're doing that is because they don't have a ghost of a chance of just voting for impeachment on the basis of the crimes described, going to the Senate and then winning impeachment. Won't happen because the Senate is controlled by Republicans, and they don't want to lose power. They really don't care about the fact that they've been exposed as corrupt. That's just fine so long as they get to actually have the money and power that goes along with office. And so the actual tactic will be something more like these things will be brought out to the press and brought out to the press and brought out to the press until they can raise a public fury about it. And that will be pressure on the Senate. When the pressure is obviously being applied to the Senate, when the senators start dithering about what they're going to do, that will be the time for the Democrat-controlled House to then say, okay, we're going to vote for articles of impeachment and then send it to the Senate, if it gets that far. And if it does, I suppose there's some outside possibility, really, if the people of the United States just pretty much shut the nation down over it, that he can be removed in that way, and then we have to start working on Pence. But it's a good thing anyway, however it works out officially, because that intimidation, and I use the word broadly, that is applied, basically I'm talking about Democratic pressure. You know, what a strange and frightening and bizarre thing in the United States. Democratic pressure could be brought sufficiently that it will chill certain policies and it will prevent some things from happening. It will keep Trump from going through with his agenda. Now, turning to more international news, the Yellow Jacket riots in France aren't just about fuel prices. They're a general reaction to the neoliberal attempt to transfer wealth from the people, from the working class to the billionaire class. This article is from Radio Havana, Cuba. A Dateline Paris, December 5th, French students disrupted classes on Tuesday in several parts of France amid protests against education reforms by the government of President Emmanuel Macron. Nearly 100 schools were fully or partially blockaded in the southern city of Toulouse and Créteil in the Paris area. The angry protesters clashed with anti-riot police, torching vehicles and damaging buildings. Officials say part of a high school near Toulouse was set on fire. Violence was also reported in the cities of Bordeaux and Marseille. 17 teenagers were arrested after riot police were called to Jean-Pierre Timbaud High School in Aubervilliers in the northern Paris suburbs, where a car was overturned and trash bins were set on fire. Pardon my French. The protesters demanded Macron's resignation and are opposed to changes in the college and university system. Protesting students also supported the so-called Yellow Vest movement against high living costs. And if you saw anything about that, you probably saw the Yellow Vests rioting in the streets. But returning to the article, French authorities traditionally fear school students joining protests because their demonstrations often spread quickly. Protests against fuel tax have expanded to include unpopular education changes and the working conditions of unhappy ambulance workers. On Tuesday, 11 fuel depots across France were blockaded by protesters and shut. Over 70 service stations had run out of fuel, and restrictions were in place in Brittany on how much fuel motorists could buy. And there's more on the article at Radio Havana Cuba. Although, as I've often mentioned, best if you don't want to draw attention to yourself, as I do, probably best to actually get that on shortwave radio rather than pull it up on the web. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. As I said, coming up at 9:30, Per Fogring, and news about Russia. Also from Radio Havana, Cuba, Ecuadorian President Lenin Moreno allegedly spoke to Paul Manafort, former United States lobbyist, political consultant, convicted felon, Trump's big problem, about handing over WikiLeaks co-founder Julian Assange to the United States. A report published by the New York Times Tuesday revealed that in mid-May 2017, Manafort traveled to Ecuador mainly to see if he could negotiate a deal in which China would invest in Ecuador's power system. This was the last gasp for Manafort, who was apparently trying to get a fat commission from the deal, mainly to settle his increasing debts. However, the talks did not go as planned. President Moreno and his aides instead discussed getting rid of Assange in two meetings with Manafort. Assange, who has been residing in the Ecuadorian embassy in London since 2012, was treated as an object of trade by Moreno, who wanted debt relief from the U.S. in exchange for Assange. Three people familiar with the meetings requesting anonymity said Manafort suggested he could mediate a deal for handing over Assange to the United States. It's also being reported that granting Ecuadorian citizenship to Assange last year, Moreno started talking with Russia. The plan was to provide Assange with a Russian diplomatic post and send him out of the Ecuadorian embassy in London. But the plan fell through, as Britain said that they will arrest Assange the moment he steps out of the embassy. If there's one thing the United States hates, it's good journalism and exposure of their corruption. Emissions of carbon dioxide, the greenhouse gas most responsible for global warming, reached an all-time high in 2018. Scientists said global carbon dioxide levels in our atmosphere are now higher than they've been for millions of years. That's according to Rob Jackson of the Global Carbon Project and Stanford University, one of the study co-authors. The emissions have now risen for a second year after 3 years of little to no growth from 2014 to 2016. This uptick in global carbon emissions, the largest jump in 7 years, puts the goals from the landmark Paris Agreement in jeopardy. Jackson said in a statement, quote, "We thought, perhaps hoped, that emissions had peaked a few years ago after 2 years of renewed growth. That was clearly wishful thinking. The U.S., which has been steadily decreasing its carbon pollution, showed a significant rise in emissions for the first time since 2013. The burning of fossil fuels such as coal, oil, and gas released greenhouse gases like carbon dioxide," and you already know that, so I'm not going to read that part of the article. It's 9:23. You're listening to Press Watch. Now, when this comes up, your attention may be directed to the various PSAs that you may have heard or perhaps seen on television, which by implication blame you for CO2 emissions, hoping that you will forget, for example, that after the Saudi oil embargo in 73, a law was passed nationally that would have made a large portion of the U.S. fleet electric by the then distant date of 1993. We could have had electric cars all this time. It was a political decision. The Reagan administration managed to quash that, and it was utterly forgotten. You won't find it on the web. You'll have to dig into the library to find information about that. But that law was real, It was going to happen. It was stopped because the people who elected Reagan wanted to have a regressive expansion of corporate power. They wanted to go back to the 1890s and the Roaring Twenties and the distribution of wealth and maldistribution that marked those eras, the robber barons, and they succeeded. They won. We're there. And so the world is heating up because of the carbon pollution. They want you to blame yourself because they don't want you ever to take political action against the real sources of carbon pollution. So you get in your car and blame yourself, but the fact is you'd have an electric car if it were not for the fact that our Congress is a fully owned, bought and paid for subsidiary of corporate America. Look up what the real sources of carbon pollution are. Sure, road transport is 10%. That's very significant. And as I was saying, that's gasoline and diesel road transport, and that is because of political decision. Not in your hands. You're not allowed to talk about it. The fact that we have an automobile commuting system was a political decision. And there was a court case, a very famous court case, in which I believe it was Standard Oil and one of the tire companies and somebody else got together and were charged with and were convicted of scrapping the nation's urban rail systems, streetcars, in order to promote automobile traffic. And they were fined a tiny, tiny little slap on the hand. And they were let go because here in the United States, we worship the corporations first and the policies that we create are for them. But if you look in the Guardian, road transport is 10.5% of carbon pollution. Air transport is 1.7. And if you add up all the little bits, you'll see that they are out of your hands. Other transport, 2.5. Fuel and power for residential buildings, 10.2. Fuel and power for commercial buildings, 6.3. Now, when it comes to fuel and power for residential buildings, that too could have been changed by a political decision many years ago. There's cogeneration, there's electric, there's solar, there's wind, but not while the heavily subsidized fossil fuel industry has the power. Going down the list, fuel and power for commercial buildings, 6.3. Unallocated fuel combustion, 3.8%. Iron and steel production, 4%. Aluminium, as the British say, 1.2%. Machinery production, 1%. Pulp, paper and printing, 1%. Food and tobacco industries, 1%. Chemicals production, 4%. Cement production, 5%. That's huge. Other industries, 7%. Add those up, and there are more than you driving your car, and there's certainly more than you driving what could be, what would have been, an electric car if you needed to drive at all. If you had a handy trolley to take in and didn't have to bother with the commute, wouldn't you prefer to take the trolley? You'd know exactly where it was going. And the list goes on. Coal mining, oil and gas production, deforestation, harvest and land management, agricultural energy use. Agricultural soils is huge, actually, 5%. Livestock and manure, 5%. All of these things are not you. It requires a political decision to roll back carbon pollution. It requires a political decision. And that political decision, with things are the way they are, is going to have to be huge. It's going to have to be revolutionary. When a U.S. president dies, the corporate press and the corporate dependent press move as one to use the event to reinforce the official myth that we are a decent people and our leaders are decent people. Look, there's one of them handing some candy to another. There may have been some misunderstandings in the past, we were told, but the important thing is that we honor the dead leader and refuse to speak ill of him. No one says the word imperialism, lest they wake the Furies, and it's not over yet. The holy corpse of Bush the Elder is to be get this loaded onto a train as if he were Abraham Lincoln and carted across part of Texas with glass panels to reveal the coffin. The only sad thing about the passing of Bush 41 is that he lived to a ripe old age without ever being effectively confronted for his massive crimes. He worsened the racist mass incarceration state, mercilessly bombed Iraq on the basis of a Phantom Tank Brigade, and on December 20th, 1989, he launched a vicious anti-civilian assault on poor neighborhoods in Panama City. Using advanced war helicopters, bombers, experimental and sadistic weaponry, thousands of troops killed 4,000 people, burned their bodies on little zinc platforms, and buried them in the Jardín de la Paz and other places. Watch the Panama Deception on YouTube for free. You've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. Stay tuned for Parafoggering. You've been listening on 90.7 and other frequencies in Cascadia. and via KBOO.FM to all the ships at sea.
Open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Personnel Committee will meet on the second Monday of each month at 6 p.m.
Well, good morning. This is Pierre Fogring, and the show is Fight the Empire. And we originally